Cuomo News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
Hi, Elisa Jaffe in for Ken Schramm at 6 minutes after one. Normally, you can catch me weekday mornings on KVI, 570 KVI, Smart Talk Mornings. But this week, I get to sit in with you and have the joy of speaking with King County Prosecutor Dan Satterberg right now. We were looking up some stuff, Dan, and saw that you've got your one-year review out on what's happening with gang unit prosecutions. And is it my imagination, or does it just feel like gang activity is worse than it's been in a while?
Well, hi, Elisa. It's great to be with you. And I'm not sure that it's worse, but I think we're starting to see it in a more obvious way in places that we've never seen it before.
Like where?
Well, a lot of the gang activity that we've seen has migrated down to the south part of the county. And it's certainly the gang culture and the gang fashions are a lot more obvious than they used to be. You know, it was just over a year ago that we had that shooting at a Kent car show where 12 people were shot in the middle of a sunny, beautiful day just like today.
Yes.
And I think a lot of people woke up to the notion that, hey, maybe we have a gang problem. Maybe we should do something about it in places like Kent and Auburn and South King County that hadn't seen it before. So that was kind of the impetus for us to begin with some new resources that the county executive and county council provided us with a full-fledged gang unit to go after these folks.
Okay, so in the year since that shooting at the car show, what have you discovered?
Well, the reason you want to have specialists is in gang prosecution and in gang investigations is you have to know who the players are. You have to know who the gangs are. There's over 100 of them in King County. You have to know who the leaders are in each gang, what sort of geographic area or what sort of crime business that they're in. They're all out there to make some money somehow, and so they specialize in different crimes.
So, Dan, are you saying that you guys know, out of the more than 100 gangs, you know who the leader is and the next guy down and, you know, the whole line of command in each of these gangs?
Well, it's not exactly the Rotary Club where people, you know, are elected to offices and have to come in and sign in at every meeting. It's a little less organized than that in most of these gangs. But that sort of intelligence is very helpful. Particularly when you have an incident where you're not sure who the perpetrator is, but you do know that the victim gang was in a beef with a rival gang. It's useful to know all of that to give you a place to start your investigation.
Are you focusing mostly on street gangs, or are you dealing with outlaw motorcycle gangs as well?
Oh, the motorcycle gangs have been with us for decades, and they're still on the law enforcement's radar screen, and even though they're getting a little bit older, and it doesn't mean that they're less interested in illegal activity or violence. So they're definitely on the radar screen, as well as the youth gangs that we may more commonly think of.
And some of the motorcycle gangs, it's like they make it a little more obvious, because isn't it like the three different patches, so you can almost look at what they are wearing, you know, like you could before with the Bloods and the Crips, the colors.
That's right. They more proudly wear their colors and their associations.
Mm-hmm.
The hardcore street gangs used to do that. Back in the late 80s, I did gang prosecutions here in King County, and you could tell that people wore uniforms. They had their red kerchief hanging out of their pocket. You knew what team they were on. Now it's much more diffuse, and it's much more of a popular culture and fashion, so it's a little more difficult to tell who the gang wannabes are and from the hardcores if just by looking at them. You really have to follow their conduct, and that's what we're trying to do. Anytime an identified gang member is involved in any criminal activity, even though it might not be technically a gang crime to promote the gang, we're going to come down pretty hard on that person because we know that they're up to other bad things in our community.
King County Prosecutor Dan Satterberg with us. And in the year that you've been reviewing what's happened with gang unit prosecutions, how many gang violence cases have you tackled?
So we just filed our 100th gang violence case. We have 4 members of our gang unit, so they've been pretty busy.
Yeah, that's how many filed. How many do you think there are out there that you wish you could have filed?
Well, one of the advantages to being in a gang is that if you do commit a crime, that witnesses are intimidated, are afraid to come forward. Your own gang members sure aren't going to testify against you. And even rival gang members sometimes subscribe to the no-snitch ethic, and they're going to take care of justice in their own way. So definitely gang crimes are underreported and are difficult to solve. And even after we filed the case, it provided many challenges for our prosecutors to present that evidence to a jury.
Dan, can you break it down for us? How many are minors, underage gang members, and what's the average age of a gang member?
Well, I'll tell you, of the 100 cases that we filed, 21 of them were filed against offenders who were 16 or 17 that we can bring automatically into an adult court. So that's, 21% out of 100. So it starts young. Usually, younger kids are attracted to gangs just by the excitement. They may have an older brother or a cousin or somebody who's in the gang, and they start to hang out there. And it's at that critical age, really, where we can't prosecute our way out of this problem. It's when kids are maybe 8, 10 years old where we ought to try to provide other alternatives to them. And we're competing with gangs for excitement and for the hearts and minds of our kids. And a lot of kids underestimate the danger of being in a gang and overestimate the benefits.
I'm wondering, as you mention all of that, I'm thinking, who is more dangerous, a young wannabe who's going to do anything to prove themselves, or somebody who's been around the block and they don't care as much and they'll do whatever?
I think all of the above might be the right answer there, but certainly younger kids are more impulsive. We know their brains are still developing and they don't understand fully the consequences of what they're doing. And when they're handling guns, that's when I get very afraid, because kids don't know how to handle guns. They've never had a proper gun safety course. They don't know how to aim. They don't know how to shoot. They see what they see on TV and think that they should also handle a gun. So young kids with guns are still a huge concern and a priority for us.
You know, I'm hearing from a lot of young people today who are saying the big problem that they're seeing now isn't as much the violence, but they're saying heroin. Heroin is huge amongst the young people. Is that what you're seeing with the young gangs, that they're distributing that?
Well, every gang has its own way of making money, and some are definitely into drugs and doing the traditional street corner sales. Others steal cars. Others do burglaries and try to get what they can out of homes and resell those, or especially they're looking for guns that are not secured, and also for pharmaceutical drugs that may be in your medicine cabinet.
That's interesting. So it's almost a breakdown. Like somebody might have the prostitution ring, and the next guy might have the painkillers, and
exactly.
Then the next guy might have burglaries. And then they don't cross over on each other's turf.
Well, it's not quite that neat and orderly, but they all have a different thing that they might do to make money, because primarily they're out there doing this because they don't have hope, they don't have jobs, they don't have prospects for education, and they've given up and they've decided they're just going to be criminals. And they don't expect to live very long, and that's when they get to that point, we really don't have many other options other than law enforcement.
And how are you doing when it comes to money to help with the financing of prosecuting these cases?
So after the Kent Car Show shooting a year ago, we got a grant of enough money for me to hire 3 prosecutors and a paralegal. So that is going to be up again before the county council and the county executive here in a month or two. So while we've made great progress, we haven't solved the gang problem in a year, and we're going to need to maintain that effort. So it'll be number one on our list of things that we need to have on our budget.
Well, thanks for being with us, Dan. Dan Satterberg, King County Prosecutor. Have a great day.
Thank you.
This is Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
It's 19 after 1. Thanks for being with me. This is Alisa Jaffe in this week for Ken Schramm. And we are learning more this morning from federal authorities about the man accused of wounding a security guard at the offices of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. And we have ABC's Brad Garrett with us. He is ABC's crime and terrorism consultant. And good afternoon to you, Brad. This is fascinating what's going on here.
Well, it is, because, and I knew that something was amiss yesterday afternoon when the FBI responded to a local shooting with their evidence response team and dozens of agents. So they must have learned early on that this was, in all probability, a politically driven, agenda-driven, probably hate crime-driven crime. And that's why they're, I think, in the middle of it.
Well, let's get into it a little bit, because the man, the suspect in this case, Floyd Corkins, walked into the lobby of the Family Research Council building and had 15 Chick-fil-A sandwiches in his backpack. Let's go to the relevance of that, Brad.
Well, as many of your listeners know, the president of Chick-fil-A, I believe his name is Dan Cathy, has stated in recent times that he's opposed to same-sex relationships. And I believe he's also very close to the Family Research Council. And so it sort of makes sense, I guess, if you're opposed, if you're for same-sex relationships or some version thereof, that you would be opposed to the Family Research Council and Chick-fil-A.
Yes, and then we're hearing that the suspect in this case was a volunteer at a local gay community center and may have had some kind of vendetta against the conservative group?
Well, probably. I mean, obviously you're talking about somebody that's full of anger and rage, no matter what their philosophical bent might be, to walk into any building with a weapon and attempt to kill people. And I suspect if that security guard hadn't been able to take him down, that he would have wounded or killed a number of people. He had, I've been told, at least two 15-round clips for his 9mm weapon.
Wow. And Dan Cathy, when you think about it, here's the CEO of Chick-fil-A and proudly proclaiming his opposition to, you know, marriage equality. And First Amendment rights will protect the heck out of him, but they can't protect you from someone who's got a bent against what you have to say. What's that say to the freedom of speech?
Well, you know, Lisa, the real thorny issue for law enforcement is, to go back to what you just said, that you can say the most distasteful, hateful things that you want. It's when you act on those that you get into trouble with the law. And the trick is being able to figure out or have advanced intelligence that somebody is going to commit an act like which happened yesterday in Washington or happened a week or so ago outside Milwaukee. And so as a result, it's a very difficult place for law enforcement.
You know, something else I saw that you were working on early this morning, if I can switch gears with you for a moment, Brad.
Sure, sure.
I saw that you were talking about how some of the supplies that are used to make meth are being sold in our local hardware stores.
Well, that's right, Elisa. In fact, if you look at the common ingredients in a meth formula, if you will, paint thinner, battery acid, Freon, drain cleaner that you just mentioned, red phosphorus, the red top to matches, pseudoephedrine, which is in Sudafed. It's one of the few things that we do some controls over. So the long and the short is that the everyday items that you or I or anyone else go to the hardware store, Lowe's, et cetera, are items that if you want to make something illegal like methamphetamines, you can.
Do you think that'll change the way things are handled at hardware stores? If somebody, do you think police will start hanging out and watching the surveillance tape at Lowe's and Home Depot?
Well, I don't think so. I think here's the realistic approach to that. If someone comes into, for example, a Lowe's in Seattle and buys 15 cases of drain cleaner, maybe somebody needs to know about that. Now, you might have a completely rational reason. You own 10 apartment buildings or something. Sure. But short of that, nobody needs 10 cases of drain cleaner. And so it's that type of triggering where people are buying mass quantities of any of these common household ingredients that I just mentioned. I think someone should know about that. I mean, it's one thing for law enforcement to check out. The other side of that is you're now asking law enforcement to do yet one more thing with less people.
Yeah, you can't overburden them, but we got to raise the red flag somehow if it's happening right under our noses. ABC's Brad Garrett, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome, Elisa.
Seattle's waking up to the Como Morning News 5 to 9. Right now, Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
Elisa Jaffe in for Ken Schramm. You know Ken is a Mariners fan, and he's probably bummed when the Mariners lost Ichiro recently, but boy, you can bet he was screaming from his couch last night. Yesterday afternoon when Hernandez pitched the Mariners' first perfect game in the third in baseball history. We're going to look into what King Felix did yesterday.
Como News Radio, everything you need to know. Now, Newsline with Ken Schramm.
The Seattle Mariners' Felix Hernandez, the 2-2.
The crowning achievement for King Felix. Elisa Jaffe in for Ken Schramm. It's 1:36. What an exciting night for the Mariners. Who cares if it's, you know, dealing with the last place in the season? They had the perfect game, Felix Hernandez did, and he's wanted this achievement for so long, and he struggled to describe what it felt like.
It's something special, man. I mean, like I said before, I don't know any words to explain this. I mean, this is pretty amazing.
So amazing. But, you know, it wasn't just pitching the perfect game. It's pitching the perfect game in front of the perfect crowd. An afternoon game with fans who just love you. We've lost Ichiro. We're just now hanging on saying, Felix, stay with us. You got to stay with us. And so what was it like for Felix Hernandez to pitch the perfect game here at home?
Awesome. I think they deserve, and I deserve too. I mean... Yeah, but in front of Seiko, I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah, you know, he was so happy. Perfect game against the Tampa Bay Rays. AJ, get on the microphone. You're in there. You weren't ready for me to come to you, but you weren't working at all yesterday because I kept looking for you, trying to get you to roll the carts when I was doing things. And I'm sorry, but I noticed your face was over there toward the television set, and I kept hearing Mariners scores in the background. Tell me what it was like for you to watch that, even though you should have been listening to us. But what was it like for you?
Job, but
I know.
I was. It was perfect just to watch that, just to be in that moment with it, even though I'm just watching on TV. It was amazing.
Why? What does it mean to you as a Mariners fan to have that after everything the team's been through?
It means that we still have the potential to do anything, that we still we're still a great team.
You still have hope.
I mean, that was just phenomenal to see from Felix.
So you have hope and you can believe. And the family for Felix wasn't even here to celebrate it. That's what was so sad.
Yeah, I'm a little sad because my wife's taking a flight back to Seattle, Venezuela last week. She's not here. The kid's not here. And, I mean, I'm alone, man.
He's alone. He had a crowd full of fans. He's got all of us watching it, all of us cheering it on. But when your family's not there, he felt alone. But what an exciting moment. And an exciting moment for the Mariners announcer, Dave Sims, I'll bet, too, Dave. What was that like for you?
Hyperventilating at between innings, probably between 6 and 7, just remembering some Lamaze exercises from back in the day when our kids were en route. You got to calm yourself down. You got to think about what you want to say, and you got to just compose yourself. And lucky for me, this is the third time I've gone through this. We had the combined no-no and then the umber perfecto against the Mariners. I did that for Fox and now yesterday. So,
yeah, what's it like when it's against the Mariners versus with the Mariners?
Well, I was doing a national broadcast. So I got to play it down the middle yesterday. It's our guy. It's my guy. And obviously, you pump it up even more for my way of thinking. And to me, it was twice as exciting because it was our guy.
How do you know what to say in that moment? Do you have it in the back of your head, a script somewhere, just in case that does happen? Because we were sitting there going, he's 3 away from a perfect game. He's this away from a perfect game. We kept waiting and waiting. So are you just writing down notes like, this is what I'm going to say if it is?
Well, I'm an old newspaper guy. I'm used to writing bulletin leads and all that kind of stuff. I used to be a newspaper guy at the New York Daily News and the Philadelphia Inquirer. So I know what it's like, getting ready to write a bulletin lead. And it's just a matter of making sure you keep it short, sweet, and simple. And then on TV, you describe what has happened, the significance of it, a little color and texture, and then get the heck out of the way and let the pictures take over, pictures and the sound.
Yeah, well, here's some of that sound again. Let's listen to you call that perfect game.
The Seattle Mariners' Felix Hernandez, the 2-2.
Describe the atmosphere in the room, in the stadium after, and in, back in the ball house after.
Well, in the booth, myself, Dan Wilson, Robbie Nielsen, our stage manager, and Chris, our stat guy, and Bubba, our A2, our audio guy. We were all flipping out. It was great. And in the ballpark, you could feel the pulse. I mean, you could feel, you know, the blood pressure of everybody. You could feel everybody's pulse. It was bouncing off the walls. I described it as such during that last inning. And it's a kind of excitement that, you know, it's the ultimate reality because you don't know what the ending's going to be like, and you're on the edge of your seat, and everybody's breathing. I mean, I talked to guys in our dugout, and they were saying how they couldn't move, how they couldn't breathe, how exciting it was. It's a different experience. It's a rush, and it's one of the reasons why I got into the business.
Interesting, too, because it was one of those days. It's an afternoon game, so there's not as big a crowd. You know, we just lost Ichiro, so some people are like, oh, what's going to happen? You know, your fair-weather fans weren't all there. And so then to miss a game like this, what do you think it could mean for the team in the long run?
Well, you know, Felix is Felix, and he loves it here in Seattle, and he's committed to staying here. And now we got to get some an offensive unit to continue to develop the young guys that we have, add a couple of pieces until we can have a bona fide and consistent offensive attack to go with what appears to be a very good pitching staff, both starters and relievers. Yesterday we went into the game fourth in ERA in the American League, one of the better units. So just got to get the offense up to speed. But I think it's on the come. I really do.
Help us understand, give us the context, when it's only the 23rd perfect game in baseball history, how tough of an accomplishment was this that he achieved?
Well, I tell you what, there's the thing that's beautiful about baseball, you just never, ever know. And there's one play in particular yesterday, or a couple of them. One, the first play of the game, Sam Fuld hits a drive to deep right center field at the 385 sign. Eric Thames had to run about, I don't know, 60 yards to go get it from he went from the sunshine into the shade. He makes a catch. There was another play late in the game, slow roller hit towards third. Kyle Seager, the third baseman, cuts in front of the shortstop, Brendan Ryan. Luckily, he didn't deflect that ball. If he deflects the ball, maybe he doesn't recover in time to throw the runner out, or he takes an opportunity away from Ryan to throw a guy out. You know, Jaso, the catcher, could have had a pass ball and a swing and a miss strike three with one or no or one out, and would have put a runner at first.
It's like a deck of cards. You could just see if it, one little thing, a little blow here, there, or that, it could have gone another direction.
Right, and even the most routine plays, we had all kinds of routine plays. Guys hit right balls, hit right at guys, and hey, they were terrific. They you know, steely nerved. Everybody made the plays yesterday, and it was a beautiful thing. But you know, you talk in a given day, and the Mariners are a great defensive team, so I think that was a big factor in things working out to our favor yesterday.
Dave Sims, the Mariners broadcaster, with us after being able to call the game of a lifetime for Felix Hernandez of the M's with this perfect game against Tampa Bay. What does this mean to him besides it being his crowning achievement? Does he get a big old bonus from the M's, or does he get a Nike sponsorship? What happens now?
You know, if he's got a good agent, and I'm going to assume that he does, I'm going to assume that he's got a bonus. I'm going to assume he's got a bonus in his contract that says, hey, I get X for a perfect game. I get X and Y for a World Series clincher or pennant clincher, that type of stuff. But in terms of what it means for Felix, it just kicks him up another notch in a hierarchy of baseball in terms of regarding pitchers. There's about 7 or 8 really good pitchers on the planet, and he's probably 1, 2, or 3.
And what a long way from that curly-haired 19-year-old who started, you know, throwing balls for us a long time ago. It's so it's so great to see, and interesting to hear that all he was worried about, that his family wasn't there.
You know, that tells you the type of human being he is.
Sure
so
does.
I thought that was I was really touched by that. And I'm sure, you know, the guys took it, you know, with an off day today. I'm sure the guys went out and had a good time with him, and probably didn't allow him to pick up a check. I know he's a guy that's really generous and welcoming in new guys and young kids and putting his arm around them. Here's how we do things here.
But they had to be celebrating with him. You know it. Dave Sims, thanks for taking time with us. Appreciate
it. You're very welcome. My pleasure. I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Reporting the news, understanding the news. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
Good afternoon. I'm Alisa Jaffe, sitting in this week for Ken Schramm. Well, what's happening in the business world today? We thought we'd bring Brad Good in from Como 4 News to tell us it's a bad day for folks at Facebook, but a good day for folks at Microsoft, probably.
Yeah, a bit of a mix. But, you know, let's start with overall Americans. You know, I mean, we all struggle to pay our bills. We know everything's costing more and more. And we start hearing that the economy's getting a little bit better, but we're still learning that so many Americans still have little left after paying the monthly bills. Elise, a new Career Builder survey shows 40% of workers are still just making it month to month. Now, that's better than it was when it was 46% in 2008 at the height of the financial crisis. But it still shows a lot of people are just barely making it. And those are the people that have jobs. And the study also shows that more women than men are struggling living paycheck to paycheck.
Is that because there are more women now working, or what is it? What's it mean? Or is it just they're not getting paid as much?
I think that's part of it, you know. And, you know, for single family households, maybe where the women are paying all the bills there. Mm-hmm. And it's a struggle to make it month to month, which, as we've talked about earlier, what does that mean if there's no money left over? How are you securing perhaps a 401k or looking
that's
about
not even in
how
the
to
picture.
Invest? Exactly.
Retirement,
for retirement.
College, nothing is in the picture that
exactly.
way. So that's a little bit frightening. But some of the CEOs at the big companies are doing okay.
Yeah, the CEOs are doing well, and those companies are doing well, but it's interesting that we learned that they're not really paying much in federal tax. So the Institute for Policy Studies identified 26 big companies. We're talking, we think about corporate America, it's these companies, AT&T, Boeing, Citigroup, and others, where they paid their CEOs an average of $20 million a year, and they paid little, if any, in federal taxes.
So the big gorillas at the companies are making more money than the companies are having to pay in taxes?
In federal taxes, in many cases. In fact, Boeing is even identified in this study. They single them out. You know, Jim McNerney, the CEO there based in Chicago, made over $18.5 million. Boeing, as a company, got a tax refund last year of $600 million. Now, you know, part of that is our Washington delegation giving tax breaks to Boeing because they want to keep those jobs here. So, you know, it's interesting. You always got to pay, you know, Peter to rob from Paul, or whatever you want to talk about that. But, I mean, these big corporate America giants are getting some huge tax breaks right now, you know, to keep them happy and to hopefully keep them creating jobs. And Boeing is one of those.
Oh, my goodness. I had no idea that he was making $18 million, though. I still can't get over that one. A lot of folks were hoping they were going to make a lot of money when they bought Facebook stock, and that hasn't been the case.
Yeah,
and what's happening today?
Well, you know, even the insiders, this is interesting. The lockup period ended today. That means insiders. Those are the people that work for Facebook or some of the big money people that got in on the stock before it went public at $38 a share. So they got it at a reduced cost. Starting today, they could start selling their shares, and trust me, they are dumping. I mean, more than millions of shares have already been sold, and that has dropped Facebook stock to a new low. It's been trading down roughly 5 or 6%. It's down to like $20 a share.
What's that say about the future of Facebook when you see these guys who had all these beliefs in it and then they're just dumping it the second they can?
I think it's perhaps still too early to tell. Mm-hmm. Look, Facebook is viable. It's got some 900 million users and growing. It's just that the business model is still a bit uncertain as to how do you monetize that? How will they eventually make money to sustain themselves? And a lot of people questioned the business plan and thought it was way overvalued. We talked about this several months ago, that it was overvalued coming out of the gate when it went public. And so a lot of people are paring back now their expectations, and some people are getting out now.
Microsoft is in an unusual situation. It was never number one in gaming. We always thought about Nintendo being the big guy.
And Sony with the PlayStation, exactly.
How's Microsoft doing these days?
You know, actually, there's some good news here. We're seeing, I guess, some brightness on the horizon here. The Xbox Kinect is really winning more and more gaming fans. And the gaming fan is fickle. It's that male 24 to 35, and they know what the latest and greatest is, and they want new games all the time. But the Xbox Kinect is actually really driving sales for gaming, and they're expected to do better in the near future. Xbox Kinect console had 47% of U.S. hardware sales in June, while Nintendo's Wii sales tumbled in the last 3 months. And a lot of this excitement is being driven by the new Xbox that's rumored to come out in the next 18 months, and a lot of gamers are getting excited about that.
And 30 seconds left to tell us how excited you were to be at that perfect game yesterday at the Mariners.
I'll tell you, it was really something to witness history there. It's the first time I've been of the ballpark this year. Here I am with my daughter and my father-in-law, and we're watching this. It was like we won the pennant, at least. I mean, it was remarkable to stay there and see. I'm so happy for King Felix. What a game he pitched. He was dominating.
It must have been so exciting. Oh, Your one game of the year, and that's the game you get to see. Talk about
a lucky
guy.
I've been on a high. It's just been fabulous. Go M's. I loved it.
Brad Good, thanks for being with us.
Time to discuss, dissect, and debate the news. Newsline PM with Ken Schramm on Como News Radio.
You know by now, I hope, that there are a lot of cooling centers open all over the area. For the complete list of them, you can go to comonews.com and find out where you can go, or maybe you need to send a neighbor or a loved one there, because they're going to need to get out of the heat if they don't have air conditioning, if they have conditions like emphysema. And some of the shelters will take pets, some won't. They'd like them to be, you know, in cages. Some provide cages. So you really want to make that clear before you head over to some of these shelters. But the complete list is on comonews.com. And the elderly are dealing with more than the heat. They are more and more vulnerable than ever to having their money swindled from them. And that's the finding of a new online study from Investor Protection Institute. They've surveyed more than 750 financial health and legal experts, and they say family members were the biggest culprits for swindling the elderly out of their money, followed by caregivers and strangers. And the CEO, Don Blandon, says an unknown swindler is really the most dangerous. And we've got some audio of that. That
deplete the entire life savings of a senior at the worst possible times in their lives.
Yeah, those scams are just absolutely horrible. Theft or diversion of funds or property by family members accounts for most of the problems for the elderly. It's 2 o'clock.